high in the upper 50s and plenty of sunshine. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
Looking to save money in 2020? Shift your high-interest credit card balances to a new card from ASC and receive 0% interest for 12 months. Apply online or visit a branch today. ASC Credit Union. Your life, your goals, your ASC. Terms and conditions apply. Equal opportunity lender.
Alabama News Network, I'm Andrew James. A Montgomery police car was damaged by a stolen vehicle Thursday. The driver reversed when the officer approached the car, hitting the MPD vehicle. Four people ran off after this happened, but were later taken into custody. The officer involved was not injured. Andalusia police arrested two men on attempted murder charges on New Year's Day. Authorities say Michael Berry and Joshua Coleman shot at each other around 4 a.m. Wednesday. This happened on McClendon Avenue. No one was hurt, but authorities say there is property damage. And a federal judge will decide if Alabama Secretary of State John Merrill can block people on his personal Twitter account or if doing so violates their free speech rights. Merrill's attorneys argue the account is personal and not an official account of the state office. For more on these stories and others, watch Alabama News Network on CBS 8 and ABC 32. I'm Andrew James.
The views and opinions of the following program are solely those of the host and other contributors. These do not necessarily represent those of Liberty Acquisitions 825, Blue Water Broadcasting, its management, staff, or any advertisers.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. Subscription required. See website for full details and important safety information.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. You pay just $30 for a month's supply. And right now, get your first online doctor's visit totally free when you go to forhims.com/joy. That's right, free, zero copay, no expensive appointments, no awkward face-to-face conversations to get your prescription. Hims connects you to doctors online who can evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe your ED medication. And a pharmacy sends it right to your door. Hims makes it affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To start your free online visit, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/joy. That's forhims.com/joy for your free online visit. forhims.com/joy.
Tired of my voice yet? It's Tiffany Coleman. My husband is Jeff Coleman, who's running for Congress. Jeff's in the moving van business, Coleman Worldwide. He's the fourth generation to run it, since his grandfather was helping people move in a horse and wagon. He started working for him when he was 10. Says he could only lift a lampshade. For a few summers, he worked with a man he just loved called Baby Cakes. Now, Baby Cakes couldn't read much, so he did the driving and the heavy lifting, while Jeff was the navigator. Then came college and the best part of his life. He met me. I'll tell you about that the next time we talk.
I'm Jeff Coleman, the conservative businessman candidate for U.S. Congress, and I approve this message. Paid for by Jeff Coleman for Congress.
The River Region's News Talk Station. News Talk 93.1, WACV. News Talk 93.1.
Four times in my life, America's been at war. That's a tragic waste of lives. And it makes you realize how desperately the world needs a lasting peace. Just across the hall here in the White House is the Roosevelt Room, named after the two Roosevelts who served here, one a Republican, one a Democrat. Many decisions are made in that room. And often as I meet with my staff, I gaze up at the five service flags, each representing one of the five military services. And draped from each flag are battle streamers, signifying every battle campaign fought since the Revolutionary War. Each ribbon a remembrance of a time when American men and women spilled their blood into the soil of distant lands. My fondest hope for this presidency is that the people of America give us the continued opportunity to pursue a peace so strong and so lasting that we'd never again have to add another streamer to those flags.
It's the Dan Morris Show. Join the conversation by calling 272-9228. And now, here's Dan Morris.
Stock market down 163 points. Temperature outside of 63. It is wet and rainy. Let me bring in Mr. Producer himself, the one and only Joey Clark.
Hello.
How you doing today, big guy?
Slow news day.
Not much going on at all.
Oh, man.
Yeah, when I left Atlanta yesterday, it was 46 degrees. I drive 2 hours and 10 minutes to Montgomery, and it's 67 degrees.
Oh.
I'm going like, what? Did I go through kind of a temperature warp or something? God. And then this rain.
I know.
I'm not digging this stuff, but it was cold in Atlanta and Georgia. But interesting football that on the Alabama and Auburn game, the Oregon game was spectacular. Down 1 point last second. Man, unbelievable. You guys were talking about my former partner, Mark Montel, and we lost Mark Montel yesterday. And I was fielding all these telephone calls about it and his loss. It's really a shame. He's just had a grandbaby not long ago from Little Mark, a.k.a. Biscuit, as he would call him. But Mark is going to be sorely missed. And I'm glad that we get to honor him on the air because, you know, sometimes when people kind of pass away, you never hear anything about them. And, you know, Mark and I had some differences, but it was kind of, in a way, good differences. I think we complemented each other very well. And I want to play his theme song that he always used for his show in remembering Mark Montel. Show on a sad day, I'll have to say, and losing Mark Montel. But our tribute to Mark Montiel, I hope everyone will remember him very fondly. I want to give a shout-out to Shelby, new listener to the show. We have Dr. David Sorensen calling in on the Soleimani death and all of the ingredients of that. There's so much to talk about with that. And then we have Brian Taylor talking about the legal constitutional issues with it. He'll be calling in at 2 o'clock. Dan Mar Show will be back right after this.
He may not know whether he's coming or going, but whether you're going to work or coming home, Greg Budell is there. Mornings, 6 till 9, and afternoons, 3 till 6. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Hey, have you heard about what's happening at Wind Creek Casino and Hotel?
No, but I've heard it's the coolest casino and hotel ever.
Well, now, if you join Wind Creek Rewards, they'll reimburse you with free play for up to $1,000.
They'll give me back as much as $1,000?
I know, right? They call it the New Player Promise. And they'll also throw in some free food so we don't go hungry.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go to Wind Creek Casino and Hotel.
New members only. Minimum $75 loss required. Visit windcreek.com for complete rules.
What's your biggest investment? More than likely, it's your home. So treat it that way when you hire a painting contractor. At PBS Painting, there are no gimmicks, no $99 specials. Just quality painting and someone who treats your home with the same respect that you do. At PBS Painting, we have been painting for years and look forward to many more years to come. With PBS Painting, the job gets prepped properly, whether it's cleaning, scraping, or priming. We always use quality products, which is a must for a quality paint job. So if you're looking for a painter that doesn't need upfront money and is on the job at all times, then please give me a call. Scott Bowers and PBS Painting, 294-5122. That's PBS Painting, 294-5122. Look at some of our work on Facebook at PBS Painting Montgomery.
Montgomery Area HelpWanted.com salutes the Employee of the Month. The one employee you can't live without. The others, let's just call them Dave.
Dave, what does collate mean?
Oh, hey, Dave. I think it means to flush.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Well, better start collating the boss's sales pitch.
We believe local businesses should be packed with more local Employees of the Month and fewer Daves. We make it easy to post a job, and it's local, so you won't get spammed by faraway job seekers. Montgomery Area HelpWanted.com. Local jobs that work.
Dave is a common name used in a comical way. Please don't write us to tell us you were insulted by this ad. That would be a real Dave move, Dave.
Live local talk. The River Region's only 24-hour News Talk FM station. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
That's where we are. Whenever there's an issue in the Middle East, there is one man we call on, and that's Dr. David Sorensen. Dr. Sorensen, welcome aboard the Dan Mar Show.
Thank you very much, Dan. Thanks for having me.
This is a big day. Let's start this. Go get your dossier on Soleimani and tell us about him.
He is probably number 4 on the Iranian organization chart, but if you ask Iranians on the street who is the most revered and powerful person in Iran, they would say General Soleimani. So he is extremely powerful. He's an interesting character. He was born to a poor family in eastern Iran. He very quickly joined the Ayatollah's revolution, participated in the 1979 revolution. He was a commander during the brutal Iran-Iraq War from 1980 to 1988. He has seen combat almost continually. And he rose up based on not his education, because all he has is a high school degree, but on his skill, his intelligence, his craftiness, his ability to think strategically, and ultimately became head of what is known as the Quds Force. That is a very powerful international wing of the Islamic Republican Guard Corps, which is by far the most powerful organization in Iran. It works directly for the Ayatollah. It's a militia. It's a business. It's a political organization. And General Soleimani, as the head of it, expanded his range not only in Iran, but also in Syria. He is probably more responsible than any other single figure for the survival of the Bashar al-Assad regime in Syria against the Syrian civil war. He has been responsible for arming and supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon and directly supportive of the Iraqi Shia militia in Iraq that have been active ever since the U.S. Invasion of 2003 to remove Saddam Hussein. So his range of power, the admiration he has, his ability to direct militia, to raise money, to train, to equip, is unparalleled, really, in Iran. So this is a very big deal.
The well, you cover a lot of territories that I'm going to get deeper into. The Kurd forces, for example, but let me save that for a moment. How far does his portfolio stretch? You mentioned several countries, but is Afghanistan in his portfolio, Lebanon, you mentioned Syria, Yemen, for example, and where else does that portfolio go to?
Well, not so much in Afghanistan as it does in Yemen, but, you know, at Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, and in some of the other countries around Iran, in addition to Iraq, where he has tremendous influence, anywhere there are Shia rebels, General Soleimani has had a major hand in strengthening them, and in many cases, allowing them to not only survive but to do very well against much larger forces.
On the Kurd forces, when I saw the video of them attacking the embassy, there were people that were actually in military uniform, camouflage, no rank, no insignias. Tell me what the Kurd forces do. You know, how do they get involved in these proxy groups?
What they do is they take their directions almost directly from Iran, but they actually work through local militias. So the people in the Quds forces in Iraq, for example, are Arabs. They're not Persian. They're Shia. But again, they claim loyalty to Iraq, so they don't simply are seen as a tool of the Ayatollah or the Iranians, because there are significant differences between Iranians and Arabs. But they have managed to blur over that distinction and essentially use that Arab identity in the Arab countries to get ahead. They are also very powerful as Shia militia. The Shia have a long history as the oppressed and as those who must continually fight against the Sunni and others. And they use that emotion very, very cleverly. They go back to the Battle of Karbala in 680, and they mobilize all of this anti-Shia history to strengthen themselves. So part of it is organization, part of it is money, but a lot of it is just plain emotion that the Shia are able to mobilize. And again, Soleimani and the Quds forces were very good at mobilizing that kind of militia through passion plays, through propaganda, through stories, and it just goes on and on and on. The Quds force is probably one of the most powerful militias in anywhere in the Middle East.
Well, is it a command and control type situation, or are they more of kind of different pods that are out there operating with general instructions?
Well, they get general instructions, but the local leaders of these different militias that are supported by the Quds forces have their own leadership. But again, they're very careful to not have direct ties to Iranian leadership. Rather, the story is the Shia story, so that again, the Iranians aren't blamed for their success. But again, it's a very loose kind of command and control, so that again, plausible deniability is always there.
They've already named a replacement for Soleimani, but it sounds like this guy is more of an administrative person. Excuse me. Can he really be replaced because of his knowledge of tactics and things like that?
It's going to be difficult for the Iranians to replace him with somebody with his broad range of not only experience, but loyalty. You can plug another person in. Look, Soleimani knew that he was targeted. Most Iranians knew that he was not going to likely die of old age. He was going to be assassinated. And so they have been working to replace him. But within Shia lore, the degree to which a person is respected and admired is extremely important. And again, Soleimani has built that up since before 1979. And another person who comes in may have his title, but he is not going to be emulated. It's known as Barja, and it's so important within the Shia tradition that even Ayatollahs are generally ranked not by their religion, but their status as a Marja, as a respected, emulated person. Nobody can replace Soleimani for many years on that status, and that's really important.
Interesting. So this new guy who's kind of a bean counter administrative guy, he's not going to have the respect that you feel among the rank and file?
That's right. He will not. He's relatively unknown. The point is, though, that I am quite certain that Soleimani, again, knowing he was targeted by the Americans, by the Israelis, by the Saudis, by ISIS, by lots of people, has certainly been trying to educate a successor. But again, you can't replace a person's respect and emulation.
Interesting. What do you think the reason was that Soleimani was in Iraq, and was he directing operations against the U.S. Embassy, in your opinion?
I don't know for sure, but I'm quite certain that he was there to take advantage of the growing anti-American sentiment in Iraq, which was certainly reflected in the recent demonstrations and riots against the U.S. Embassy and other places. The United States is increasingly blamed for the poor economic conditions in Iraq. They're blamed particularly for the corruption in Iraq, which is deep. The economy just isn't doing well. And for a country that still has a lot of petroleum, many Iraqis are deeply disappointed that their country can't be more like Saudi Arabia and less like it is today. So the unhappiness is there, and the unhappiness is blamed on the United States because, again, the Americans were the ones who have installed and supported the current Iraqi leadership, although with great hesitation. And so it is valuable for people like Soleimani to come to Iraq to stir up rebellion, to support these popular mobilization pro-Iranian Shia militia within Iraq, because, again, it weakens the American position and allows the Iranians to blame the United States, because otherwise the Iraqis could turn around and say, these leaders that we have, these Iraqi Shia leaders, are also supported by Iran. Why is it Iran's fault? So I think the real purpose of his visit was not necessarily to attack U.S. diplomatic personnel, but rather to continue to stir up dissent against the United States so that the pro-Iranian Iraqi Shia government doesn't get the blame.
You've been to Baghdad. You've been to the Green Zone. Let's talk about the embassy that's there, of what you can talk about. This is one of the largest hardened facilities that America has. Were you kind of surprised that these protesters just walked into the Green Zone to get to the, because I understand talking to someone else, that the U.S. Embassy is like in the center of the Green Zone?
I was not entirely surprised because I need to be careful, but any embassy has a ring of security. The outer ring of security are the national forces. And so when you go into any embassy, the first ring, you go into the Jordanian or the Iraqi embassy, the embassy, U.S. embassy in Iraq, you'll run into Iraqi soldiers at first. It's only when you get closer to the embassy that you run into American security.
The Marines.
Well, the Marines and contractors. There's also private contractors. But the Marines are primarily responsible for the embassy security. I'm a bit surprised that the embassy security folks weren't more aware that these demonstrations were coming because there did seem to be a little bit of lack of preparedness. So they did some damage, but they didn't breach the embassy. We have had many cases where embassies have been breached because once the demonstrators get momentum, it's fairly easy for them to crash through. And the Marine Forces, not that many. They're well armed, they're well trained, but they're not that many. And when you're facing a mob, I was in the embassy in Damascus a few years ago, and I got to the point where the protesters got all the way inside the embassy and got all the way to the hardened interior before they finally stopped. So, you know, tens of thousands of demonstrators, the small Marine contingent just isn't big enough to handle them. And the use of deadly force, we were very careful. I think properly so. We used tear gas, we used flares, but did not use deadly force. Once you use deadly force and you kill people, as necessary as that might be, then you've only stirred up the mob, and then they may storm on despite the fact that the Marines are firing to get the whole embassy. I think in the end, the U.S. Security Forces handled it responsibly, but again, it's a small, carefully trained force against a very large, angry mob.
But so you're not surprised that they kind of looked the other way and these protesters went through the outer circle into the green zone?
No, I'm not surprised. And I think, quite frankly, that was the right choice. Because, again, once you kill somebody, once you engage in deadly fire, you've only made the situation worse. Let them burn off steam. What happened apparently was that after they had done some damage and shouted anti-American slogans, the militia leaders actually called them off. Okay, it's time to stop. And I think the Americans were calculating on that happening. There may have been some communication between U.S. officials and the militia leaders to say, okay, you need to call them off. We won't shoot as long as you call them off and don't let them breach the inner part of the embassy.
Do you think the Kurd forces have infiltrated the Iraq military?
I think they have. The Iraq military is an interesting military. It has always had a majority of Shia, particularly in the infantry. The U.S. tried to retrain the rebuilt Iraqi forces after the 2003 dismantling of Saddam's military. And some of the training actually was pretty successful because the Iraqi military that was decimated in 2014 when ISIS took over much of the country was rebuilt and did a pretty good job in fighting back against ISIS. However, and this is important, the Quds forces joined the Iraqi military. They supported the Iraqi military against ISIS. And in that paradoxical situation, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and the Iranian militia, the Iraqi militia, were all on the same side in fighting ISIS. It is interesting that General Soleimani's Quds forces were fighting ISIS on the ground, while the U.S. was actually coordinating with them to do airstrikes against ISIS. So we had a common foe, and we did actually partner informally with the Quds forces and General Soleimani to defeat ISIS.
Dr. Sorensen, excuse me, I'd like to go to a break, come back and ask you about Iranian response and how much quality was the intel, in your opinion, on this, on Soleimani knowing the location and being able to take he and others out. And I saw the aftermath pictures of that thing. That hangar was gone.
Yes, it was.
We're going to be back with Dr. David Sorensen right after this.
Carry News Talk in your pocket? Download the News Talk 93.1 app from the App Store. Available on iPhone and Android. Never miss a moment. Download now.
I'm Ralph.
South Holly with Holly's Home Furnishings. I've been advertising with Blue Water for over 2 years and have seen tremendous results. As a family-owned business, it's great to do business with a family-owned business like Blue Water Broadcasting.
Call us at Blue Water Broadcasting and find out how we can help grow your business. Blue Water Broadcasting. Local folks helping local business.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Lillian Wu. We're learning of more U.S. troops heading to the Middle East. Two defense officials telling Fox News 3,000 more U.S. troops are heading there, deploying to Kuwait on heightened tensions following the killing of an Iranian general. It sparked debate among lawmakers in Washington, some Republicans praising the president for ordering the strike. Fox's Rachel Sutherland reports, though.
Some congressional Democrats are expressing concerns. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is calling for an immediate congressional briefing.
The Senate Majority Leader pushing back.
I recommend that all senators wait to review the facts and hear from the administration before passing much public judgment.
Mitch McConnell also blasting Democrats for the impeachment trial. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said she won't send the articles to the Senate without knowing the framework for a Senate trial. America's listening to Fox News.
Rich Thomas Weather is brought to you by Caravita Village. Mom and Dad don't have to be lonely. They're a community built on relationships. Visit Caravita Village today.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Well, hi, everybody. Our wet forecast continues. Periods of rain will be around from time to time today and really tonight, too. I think the rain will taper off late tonight as it turns colder. The high temperature today will hover between 65 and 70. We were actually warmer in the middle of the night. Tonight, colder. Overnight low temperature down to about 50. Tomorrow could be a leftover shower early, but I think it's going to be a windy, colder day. High temperature in the low 50s on Saturday, but it'll seem colder with the winds. Then mostly clear and cold Saturday night, down to 31 by dawn Sunday. Sunday is a nice day with a high in the upper 50s and plenty of sunshine. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
On FM, on your smartphone, and online, the River Region's most trusted voice, News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Two 7-2-9-2-2-8. Question, comment, viewpoint. Well, you better call. Dr. David Sorensen, our Middle East expert from Air War College, on the phone with us. Dr. Sorensen, let's talk about the intelligence of this. Were you pretty amazed that they knew exactly where he was? And it seems
no.
Okay, so it seems that they've been tracking him for a while.
They have. In fact, we've had General Soleimani in our sights numerous times and have avoided killing him. Going back to the George W. Bush administration, the instructions went out, don't kill him because the consequences are likely to be too severe. We actually had him and a Lebanese Hezbollah leader named al-Bughnaya in our sights with them together. And the order was ready to go out, take them out, and the answer came back, no. You can take out Mugnaya, known as the engineer, as a bomb maker. Don't take out Soleimani. The Obama administration made the same decision for the same reason, that he is so important, he is so revered, and the response is likely to be negative, that we don't want to take him out. And again, as I said earlier, we had a kind of informal partnership with him in the war against ISIS. So that was the second reason why the decision was made, don't take him out, because he's responsible for American death. There's no question about it. Probably 600 or more Americans in Iraq died at the hands of Soleimani-directed Iraqi militia. Probably more. They were very effective. They developed a particular shape charge that was very lethal. But again, the argument came back that as bad as he is, we're better off not taking him out because the consequences will probably be more severe. Now, if I could, Dan, I'd like to read a concluding paragraph of a brand new book on leadership decapitation written by a woman named Jenna Jordan, who's at Georgia Tech. She looked at decapitation of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Al-Shabaab, the Kurdish PKK, the Shining Path. And her answer is leadership targeting has largely been ineffective against groups that are religious, Islamist, separatist, or large. And that's pretty much all of the Quds group. So it has generally not been successful in the past. And he, again, this book just came out in November, but I think that reflects the thinking of both the Bush and the Obama administration. It's just not worth it because the consequences are going to be probably more negative than positive for the United States.
But isn't it, I mean, the great thing is we get to actually find out now. I mean, we've done this, so if they do respond big time, then we know. But if they don't, like during the Reagan administration, when we took out a third of their Navy, then maybe this was the right thing to do.
Yes. Well, again, and the Iranians don't have a strong military. And so taking a part of their Navy was a good strategy because they had been attacking U.S.-flagged ships
pretty
during the Iran-Iraq War. And targeting their oil facilities on Karg Island. They took out a lot of their oil facilities, and they didn't really respond. That doesn't necessarily carry the kind of emotion that targeting someone like General Soleimani does. So you're right. It certainly paid off to target facilities and capacity. Whether or not that it's going to be the same level of effectiveness after the death of Soleimani, I'm just not sure.
Let's talk about how they could respond. Give me some of the things that would be on their menu. Is cyber attack big? Do you think it'll be a physical attack? How large do you think the attack would be?
I think they'll wait a little bit. I don't think they'll attack tomorrow, not even necessarily next week. I'm sure they have a planned response because they knew this was coming. But they can wait a little bit. That gives them plausible deniability. But I think that it will be asymmetrical. The Iranians are not going to go head-to-head with the U.S. military in the Persian Gulf, for example. They know they'd lose that fight. But they certainly will use cyber. They're very, very good at cyber attacks. I'm quite sure we already have blocking procedures in place for that. But they can disrupt military communication. They can certainly disrupt non-military communications. I suspect there will also be some assassinations. I don't know against whom, but it could be against Israeli or Saudi Arabian friends of the United States. And there certainly could be asymmetrical attacks against U.S. forces in not only in Iraq, but also in the Gulf countries, in Kuwait, the Emirates, Saudi Arabia, for example. Remember that there was an Iranian-sponsored attack against U.S. Air Force facilities at Khobar Towers in eastern Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
The place was very well defended, and yet an Iranian bomb in a gasoline tanker got through and killed an awful lot of Americans in 1996. So it will be asymmetrical. I suspect they will use terror attacks. We don't know where. They are very creative in retaliation. It is interesting that in 1994, the Israelis twice targeted Lebanese Hezbollah Shia leaders. And Hezbollah retaliated not in Israel, not in the Middle East, but twice in Argentina. So they can strike globally. They have a global presence, and I'm relatively sure that we will be surprised about how they and where they strike because, again, they are very good at not only at surprise but at asymmetrical operations in ways that are awfully hard to anticipate. So there will be a response for two reasons. This is emotion, but President Trump said this is done to deter Iran. Iran is going to have to counter-demonstrate that things like this will not deter them, and in fact, they will cost more than the Trump administration hopes they will benefit. So there will be attacks. I think there will be asymmetrical. I think there will be across a broad range of events in broad geographical locations.
You mentioned assassinations. Are you talking about something like the ambassador that was in Georgetown that Soleimani kind of ordered the whacking of in Washington, D.C.?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Again, it could be in Washington. It could be in Jordan. It could be in Peru, for all we know. Because, again, the Iranians watch as the
Are they that widespread?
Oh, absolutely. As I said, they attacked in Argentina twice. This is a Lebanese Shia militia that attacked twice in Argentina. So they are spread all over the world. They're in Southeast Asia. They are in almost every place that there are Shia. And again, their whole message is to make sure that they catch us unaware. So they are now drawing up plans to say, where do the Americans think we will strike? That's not where we'll strike. We'll strike where they don't think we'll strike. So it will most likely surprise us as hard as we try. And we're good at anticipating surprise. But they have been able to get inside of our decision circles at a number of times to make sure that as carefully as we prepare, we remain surprised.
If I were to do a flow chart, are you saying that, for example, Hezbollah has got the coup influence on it, so they can be kind of autonomous and go do something to Israel or other folks, and then Boko Haram in Africa, same thing?
Well, not necessarily Boko Haram. That's a very much Sunni-oriented militia that actually is enemies, but absolutely on Lebanon. Hezbollah remains one of the most powerful militias in Lebanon. They are, in fact, the pivot for the Lebanese government now. We think that they have somewhere between 40 and 100,000 rockets in southern Lebanon. Again, I stood on that border last March and looked into Shia Lebanon. It is right on the Israeli border. And many of these rockets have long range. They can reach into Haifa. They can reach into Acre. They can reach almost to the outskirts of Jerusalem, and there's lots of them. So they will, if they decide to attack Israel, they will try to overwhelm the Israeli missile defense system, which is very good, and inflict damage on Israel. They can certainly attack from Yemen into Saudi Arabia. They have been doing that. Whether or not it was they or the Iranians who struck the Saudi Arabian petroleum facilities last November is still under debate, but they do have long-range missiles in Yemen that can reach into Saudi Arabia, can reach into the United Arab Emirates, can even strike U.S. facilities in some of the Persian Gulf countries. So they can certainly reach out with rockets, with missiles, with suicide bombs. Martyrdom is a big deal within the Shia tradition, and so I am quite sure there are many people who are eagerly signing up to be martyrs to avenge General Soleimani's death.
So the commonality is that they have to have a Shiite influence, and then Iran has an influence over, am I correct with that?
That's correct. There's a couple of exceptions, however.
Like the
Hamas,
Houthis?
The Houthis are Shia. They're a different tribe of Shia. They follow the 8th Imam rather than the 12th, but they're still Shia. The exception is Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad group. They are Sunni groups, but they got cut off by some of the Sunni funders like Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia tried to get closer to Israel because of the common fear of Iran. So Iran has turned around and armed and funded these two Shia-based Israeli groups. So they could also retaliate against Israel as Hezbollah strikes from the north. These groups can strike in from Gaza. So Israel has already put its forces on high alert because they certainly do expect to be part of the retaliation.
What do you think our allies, and I'm saying allies versus NATO alliance type people, how do you think they will respond to this, or are they just going to hunker down?
I am very surprised at the silence from Saudi Arabia and surprised at the silence from Israel. The Jerusalem Post reported the attack. There has been no support from the government. The Israeli government is now in disarray because of the failure of elections.
Well, Netanyahu came out and said he supported the president.
Yeah, he is kind of the caretaker right now.
Okay.
What I found surprising was the head of the Israeli Air Force, the chief of staff of the Israeli Defense Forces, only said this is a dangerous situation. He didn't really say, yes, this is a good thing or a bad thing. He was very, very careful. I've heard nothing yet from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia and Iran are mortal foes, but I'm thinking that Saudi Arabia might see this as maybe a risk that they were unwilling to take.
So, in other words, they may be a target.
I suspect that they are convinced that they will be a target. Again, ships moving Saudi Arabian oil have been attacked, most likely by Iranian. We don't know for sure, but I would say most likely. Saudi Arabian land facilities have been attacked, certainly by the Houthi, who are getting money and rocket parts from Iran. So I suspect that they have also ordered their forces on full alert, expecting that they will be part of whatever retaliation follows.
So how about Turkey? Where does the relationship Turkey to Iran, and how concerned would they be?
I think that Turkey has tried to build a more positive relationship with Iran, partly through Russia. Turkey, Russia, and Iran are historical foes, but under President Erdogan, as Turkey has weakened its alliances and bond to the West, to NATO, to the United States, Turkey has built up friendships with Iran and with Russia. So I think that Turkey, again, they've been very quiet about it. There hasn't been, as far as I have seen, any official response. But I think Turkey is understandably concerned about the likelihood of escalation in the Middle East generally. But I don't think Turkey views itself as a potential target for retaliation, given that they have been able to push themselves away from the United States.
So they're not coup forces embedded within military in Turkey?
Well, I'm sure there are some Quds forces there, but the Turks keep their eye particularly on the Quds forces because, again, it's a Sunni country. They're always concerned about Shia meddling on the country. They're much more concerned, though, about ISIS. Turkey has had a number of ISIS attacks inside of Turkey. So my sense is that if Turkey knows there may be Quds spies, at least in Turkey, they may regard that as okay because they're most likely watching ISIS rather than the U.S. or Turkey.
Interesting. Let me go to a quick break. It's a very short one. Come back for the final segment, Damar Show with Dr. David Sorensen, talking about the Middle East and the death of a major leader. We're going to be back right after this.
The Dan Morris Show.
He may not know whether he's coming or going, but whether you're going to work or coming home, Greg Budell is there. Mornings, 6 till 9, and afternoons, 3 till 6. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
President Trump's top ally is Republican Bradley Byrne.
Work hard, right wrongs, fear God. Those were our values growing up here, and I've always fought for them. When Alabama's two-year colleges were full of corrupt politicians, I drained the swamp and helped put politicians of both parties in jail.
Bradley Byrne supports President Trump 97% of the time. He's Alabama's number one pro-Trump fighter.
Whether it's building the wall, banning abortion, or confronting Adam Schiff on the impeachment conspiracy to remove President Trump and undo the 2016 election, I'm a proven fighter for the president, and I will never allow the radical left to remove him from office. I'm running for Senate because I've spent my life righting wrongs, and Washington is next.
A man of God, a pro-Trump Republican, Bradley Byrne for Senate.
I'm Bradley Byrne, and I approve this message.
Pay for by Byrne for Senate.
When news happens, you'll hear about it first. The River Region's most trusted voice. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Now back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
News Talk 93.1 FM, Dan Morris Show. On a Friday TGIF edition. Getting ready for the weekend. Very confused this week with having 2 days off. We have Dr. David Sorensen on the line with us here. Dr. Sorensen, did you see the video in Iraq of the people cheering the fact that Soleimani was killed?
I did. I don't know how accurate it is. I'm kind of need to pull it apart and see. There may be some who are simply dissatisfied with all of the Iranian leadership because of the economic chaos and corruption, but I don't know how accurate it is, and given the ease of kind of constructing these things, I'm really not prepared to say whether or not it's real or not. I need to see kind of what who made it and how generally accurate it is. I do know that he has been, in many ways, a very popular figure in Iran and in Iraq. Now, it may be that there are Sunni in Iraq that or even in Iran. Iran does have some Sunni population who are very happy that he's dead. But I just don't know how accurate it was.
Let's talk about how the situation in Iran, economically and social unrest. We talked the last time we had you on. We were talking about a thousand people were killed that were protesting. How dire of a situation are they in now in Iran, in your opinion?
The situation is really dire. The economy has been bad for a long time, even before the Obama administration ended temporarily the U.S.-imposed sanctions. The Iranian economy is managed partly by religious trusts that are also, by the way, tied to the Quds forces. That's how they raise money.
Really?
And they are the Quds forces raise money through running businesses in Iran and elsewhere. And again, there's a lot of corruption. Contracts are handed out to people based on loyalty rather than based on business ability. And so there has been a lot of resentment against the clerics and to some degree the Quds forces in Iran because of the level of corruption in the business. For example, they run the Khomeini International Airport. And one of the reasons it doesn't work very well is because everybody who operates concessions in that airport is there out of political loyalty. And the inflation in Iran has been terrible, partly because the Iranian currency has plummeted. And so many Iranians are actually secretly dealing in dollar transactions because their currency is almost worthless. Iran imports almost 50% of its food. And so when its currency plummets and they're paying for that food in Iranian rials, the inflation rate can be 200-300% sometimes. So there are dire food shortages. There are dire medical shortages. There are widespread reports of Iranians dying because they can't get medicine for things like diabetes. So the situation really is dire. And finally, the Iranians took to the streets and demonstrated, and the Republican Guard forces fired back. The domestic militia, the siege fired back, and they've killed several hundred Iranians at least, possibly even more. The economic situation in Iran is really dire. Now, one of the things that the killing of General Soleimani may do is allow the government to rally people around the killing, take their minds off the deplorable economic conditions. But that may only last for so long, because again, if you can't buy food, if you can't get medicine, if you can't afford even the most basic necessities of life, your willingness to rally around the government over General Soleimani's death is only very limited. And sooner or later, people are going to go back and say, it's too bad about General Soleimani, but I can't buy food.
One of the stories that people have kind of been perpetuating is that the Iranian people see what they're doing for the coup forces and taking money and using it for them in places like Iraq and Lebanon versus helping the people of Iran. Do you find truth to that?
That is absolutely true. It is interesting that this last year's budget for 2020, which came out in November, actually cut funding to Hezbollah by 15%. And cut funding to the Houthi in Yemen by 10%. And I think that is a direct reflection of the point that you made, that the Iranians are wondering why they can't buy food or medicine or clothing while all this money is going to foreign forces. So, yes, there's a lot of unhappiness about funding for these Shia militias outside of Iran. I think the government had to respond.
In looking at this U.S. response, let's say they do something to us. What do you see the U.S. doing, particularly if there's are there any Americans that are killed? Because I think the key for Trump is that an actual U.S. citizen died, and I think that's when they gave him the green light to say, we're going to strike back and strike back hard. What are some of the things you think the U.S. could do?
Well, the tradition has been to strike back militarily. If an American ambassador is assassinated somewhere, for example, the U.S. goes back and bombs the Iranian foreign minister. I'm making this up. This is not anything about direct. Not in the plans. We have tended to respond to military force by attacking with aircraft, cruise missiles, sinking a ship, something like that. I don't know how much thought has been given to asymmetrical responses, because that's how Iran will respond, and the Iranians will expect us to respond kinetically. My sense is that if we respond asymmetrically to an Iranian cyber attack, for example, by doing something non-military, they may be less prepared for that. And so to me, perhaps the wiser retaliation would not simply be to send in aircraft or missiles or to sink a ship, but rather to think about where the Iranians are even more vulnerable. So attack, for example, something relating to their economy, a cyber attack on an Iranian bank. Again, I'm making this up. This is not in the plans. I'm not releasing anything that's classified. But when you think about where they're vulnerable, their banking system is a sea of corruption. It's one of the reasons why the U.S. continued to sanction Iranian banks. So shut down one of their banks through a cyber attack. Shut down their ATM machines. Shut down the water supply or the power supply temporarily just to show that we can do it through a cyber attack.
How about shut down the refineries?
Shut down the refineries, exactly. They don't work very well anyway, and if Iranians can't pump oil or ship oil, that's going to make their economy even worse.
Yeah, something they kind of missed in the news that I picked up when I was doing research on this is that when they shut down our drone, one of the things we did is we did a cyber attack against some of their missile facilities and basically screwed up their software so they couldn't run their missile facilities for a period of time.
That's what we did. And again, we're good at that. We have a cyber command. We're very good at this kind of counterattack.
And tell us this. Hey, I had to go read that.
Yeah.
Dr. Sorensen, I'm out of time. I want to thank you so much for your generosity of your time. You have been so informative, as you always, always are.
Well, let me thank you in turn, Dan, for covering this, because this is a very big deal.
It really is.